hello everybody, my name is Vasily Tarasov, I'm from Stony Brook University, and I'll be talking about how to generate realistic datasets for deduplication analysis. This work was done in collaboration with Amar Mandrakit and Eris Zadok from Stony Brook University, Will Buick and Jeff Kooning from Harvey Mudd College, and Philip Shalane from EMC. So let me first start from explaining the goal of our study using just one slide. So deduplication is a process when the duplicates in the data are eliminated, and consequently you can use less disk drives, save some money on that. Academia and research propose a number of methods for performing deduplication, and industry offers a number of different products that support deduplication. So how can one compare them and select which one is the best? Well, you can look into the performance numbers published in the appropriate documentation. But the performance of deduplication depends on the data that was used during the evaluation. And surprise, surprise, everyone uses different data sets. So the comparison and evaluation becomes kind of invalid. So the goal of our study is to generate data sets so that we can evaluate and compare the deduplication system fairly. The outline of my talk is the following. Since this is the first talk in the deduplication session, I'll take a liberty to explain quickly how deduplication works. Then I'll perform a dataset survey. Then I'll present a design of our generic framework for generating datasets, present an implementation, evaluate it, and then finally conclude. So deduplication is a coarse-grained data compression technique. For example, if you have a piece of data of 1 terabyte size and you somehow were able to detect 3 duplicates there, you can actually store just 1 duplicate and plus maintain a map that would allow you to reconstruct original data. For example, in this specific example, you would save 20% of your space. Most of the deduplication systems ingest path, data path, consists of three stages. First stage is chunking. During chunking stage, the boundaries of the chunks are determined so that the probability of finding duplicates is high. File boundaries can be used as chunk boundaries. Fixed size chunking can be applied on top. In backup scenarios, variable chunking with rabbit fingerprints is popular. And there are also other more intelligent ways for doing chunking. So after chunking is done, one needs to compute hashes for every chunk. Hash is basically an easy-to-compute chunk identifier that is collision-resistant, meaning that if 2 chunks have the same hash, the probability that these chunks are different is extremely low. For security purposes, it's good if these hashes are cryptographic, and popular examples are SHA-256, MD5, and so forth. The last but not least step is to index all the hashes so that you can find duplicates quickly and also update the mapping. So let's consider an example then, index mapping in disk initial initially empty, and we have 4 chunks and the hashes are BEEF, BEEF. So when the first chunk comes into the system, the hash goes to the index, the data goes to the disk, and plus the mapping is updated. The same situation repeats for the second chunk because hash is not in the index. So hash again goes to the index, data goes to the disk, and the mapping is updated. However, the situation changes for the third chunk because the hash is already in the index. So the only thing that we need to do is actually to update the mapping. We don't need to store anything. And the same is true for the fourth chunk. So how efficient is deduplication? Well, according to many studies, the deduplication is very efficient for many data sets such as backups, virtual machines, and multi-tenant shared storage. The deduplication ratio varies from 3 to 15 times. So not surprisingly that deduplication currently is the fastest growing segment of storage industry, and more than 80% of corporations are actually exploring to use the deduplication. Of course, with all these benefits, challenges come. One of them is performance. The thing is that the write path now becomes computationally intensive, and also if your index of hashes runs out of RAM, you need to perform additional I/O. On the read path, fragmentation inherently introduced by deduplication degrades the performance. There are also problems with manageability and reliability. So there were many proposals how to keep the deduplication ratio high and still provide high performance. This is intelligent caching, prefetching, boom filters, content-aware chunking, and many other options. It is important to understand that performance of deduplication with all these optimizations actually depends on the data set that was used during the evaluation. So we made a survey of 33 research papers published in the major system conferences, and in total we surveyed 120 data sets. And here are the results. So 53% of the data sets were private, meaning that you cannot access them if you're actually not the author of this paper or you work in the same company. 14% of the papers, they used public data sets but that are very hard to access. So an example is CNN.com website snapshots from, say, December 1st to December 31st of some random year. How am I supposed to get that? 17% of the data sets used public data sets that you can access, but they were less than 1 gigabyte size. So if I would have iPod Nano, the storage in it is more than 1 gigabyte. So it's definitely not enough to stress any the scalability of a deduplication system. 9% of the data sets are synthetic and generated in a very simplistic manner, just the ratio of the duplicates is maintained, for example. And finally, 7% were different operating system images in different formats. So this diagram clearly shows that there is a need for data sets that will allow us to perform true, versatile, and easy evaluation of the duplication systems. The requirements for these data sets would be them to be accessible, realistic, sufficiently large, and still easy to distribute. And also, it would be nice if we can control certain parameters of these data sets in a controllable manner. And we think the answer to satisfy all of these requirements is to generate these data sets. So we designed a generic framework for generating data sets, and the key insight that we used is the observation how data sets are formed in the real life. So let's consider one scenario. You have an original file system tree, and then you start to use it. So as time goes, this file system changes, and then you periodically do backups. And that backup data set actually is your deduplication data set. Another scenario is then you have initially the same file system tree, you give it to three different users, and these three different users start to use them, obviously differently. So these trees start to diverge as time goes. And again, all of these users store their home directory, for example, on a shared NFS server, and this represents your deduplication data set. So the key operation here is file system change, or how we call it in our framework, file system mutation. If they are capable of emulating file system mutation realistically and accurately, then we will be able to generate such kind of data sets. So we introduced several objects in our framework. First is FS3. This is a per snapshot object that represents a file system. And we try to keep it always in RAM to perform mutation operation fast. File system tree object consists of directories and files. And file contains a list of chunk identifiers. So we do not store the chunk contents, obviously, because it won't fit in the RAM. We just store a chunk ID, which roughly corresponds to the hash in the deduplication system. This will allow us later to generate chunks in a unique manner. We try to keep the definitions of these data structures really small in order to be able to work with as large snapshots as possible. So to give you a sense of a scale of our system, if you would like to emulate the change of 2 terabyte snapshot, where the average file size is 16 kilobytes and there are 10 files per directory, you would need 9 gigabytes of RAM. If you would like to do the same with a 14 terabyte snapshot, you already need 64 gigabytes of RAM. So is it too much or not? I would like to specify here or emphasize here that this is actually the size of a single snapshot, not the size of the whole data set. So for example, if you do backup and your retention period is about 2-3 months, you would have 70 daily snapshots. And if one daily snapshot is about 14 terabyte size, the total size of your data set will be 1 petabyte, and you still need 64 gigabytes of RAM. We think this is reasonable. After defining objects, we define actions on these objects. So, and these actions, they form mutation conveyor. So let's look on the left side of this slide. The main module here is fsmutate that takes as an input file system tree object, takes as an input a profile of changes, and produces new file system tree. Profile contains some information about how to change this FS tree. So in the specification of a framework, we actually do not say how this module should be implemented. We have our own implementation, which I will be talking later about. But in theory or in practice, organizations that have some data sets, they can analyze the behavior of these data sets, how they change, and create their own implementation of these modules for our framework. So on the right side of this slide is the FS create module that takes in RAM FS tree and produces on disk image of this file system tree in different formats. It can be on disk file system, tar-like file, or incremental backup, depending on what kind of the deduplication system you are evaluating. All in total, as I said, it forms a mutation conveyor. So the question that appears is how do we get the initial file system tree image? And this is not the focus of this talk, but we have tools for doing that. So first method is very simple, to scan some existing file system with fsscan module that will produce that in-memory fs tree object. And then it serves as its first initial file system tree for mutation conveyor. The second method is a little bit more tricky. The fs profile module takes as an input some existing file system and extracts two profiles, metadata profile and content profile. The reason why we separate profile into parts is because there are already many tools available that can generate metadata of a file system, such as the file system with specified file size distribution, directory def, and so forth. A popular example is as I said, we do not specify in the generic definition of our framework how the modules should be implemented. It might depend on the specific data sets. But we had some data sets in hand, and we created our model for these data sets. And let me talk about the specifics of this model. So we collected the consecutive snapshots of real data set by scanning some real file system, using some existing backup data, and also scanning software releases. And then we observed the statistics of changes between consecutive snapshots. And specifically, we have two main structures in our statistics. One is Markov model and another multidimensional distribution. So let me talk first about Markov model. So for each file, we define the state, new, modified, deleted, or unmodified file. And the switches between these states have certain probabilities. And we compute these probabilities using three consecutive snapshots. So on the bottom of the slide, there's S1, S2, and S3. And for example, if we know that in snapshot S2, there were 10 files modified compared to snapshot S1, and then between S3 and S2, there were 8 files out of that 10 modified, the probability of modified switch in the very top is 80%. So let me show you some numbers for some real data set that we used in the evaluation. These are the numbers for the home directories data set. And interestingly, or not interestingly, there is the chances of a file that was not modified previously to be not modified again is very high for this data set, meaning that this data set is actually very stable. You also can see that, for example, the growth of this file system is about 4%. The second structure that we used in our statistics is the multidimensional distribution. You can see on the slide the dimensions of this distribution. All of them are important for various types of deduplication systems. So some of the dimensions were unique chunks, chunks with one duplicate, and chunks with two duplicates. And this is all compared to the previous snapshot. So why don't we have a dimension, for example, chunks with three duplicates? So I want to remind you that these are the changes within a snapshot. So most of the duplicates that you see in the deduplication datasets, they come from the fact that you have many snapshots, not because you have duplicates that fill the snapshot, within the snapshot. So for our data sets, these dimensions worked really well. So to give you an example how it works, multidimensional distribution is basically just a function. And you see that this function is equal 10 for specific point. So what it means? It means that there were 10 new files created at the directory dev2 with extension C. The size of this file was, the size of all these 10 files was 7 chunks. Two of these had one duplicate, and two had two duplicates. So this multidimensional distribution is for new files. We also had it for modified and deleted files. I'm not going to cover that in this talk, but you can find more information about that in the paper. So now, let me evaluate our model. These are the data sets that we used. They are quite diverse, collected in different environments, so we think we have pretty good coverage. The smallest data set was just 15 gigabyte size in total, and the largest one was of 4 terabyte size. The methodology for evaluation was the following. We scanned all snapshots of real data, then we generated mutation profiles, then we generated synthetic data set using these profiles, and then we looked at the error between the synthetic file system and the real data set. So let's first look at two very simple parameters, number of files and total size of a file system. On the x-axis, you see the number of the snapshot in the data set. So we're kind of we're adding the snapshot one by one into the data set. And every time we were measuring what was the corresponding parameter. On the y-axis is the number of files and the number of chunks for these graphs. So you can see that real and synthesized lines, they actually almost overlap. And we are kind of proud of that. So the error was 2% on the average and 6% maximum across all of the data sets that we tried. On the other hand, these are quite simple parameters, so let's look at more sophisticated one. Unique chunks, chunks with one duplicate, and chunks with two duplicates. So on the x-axis, again, you see the number of the snapshots in the data set. And this is a different data set. This is Marco's data set, where we had already 71 daily snapshots. On the y-axis, we have chunks. And we can see again that before all unique chunks, chunks with one duplicate and chunks with two duplicates, lines are following each other very closely. The error was still higher than for the simple parameters. It was 9% on average and 15% maximum, again, for all data sets. So the size of this specific Marco's data set was 4 terabytes. So the size of the profiles that we used to generate it was 200,000 times smaller, about 20, 30 megabytes. So it is really easy to distribute these profiles, and they still provide really good accuracy for these parameters. About the performance of our system, it depends on the size of our data set, obviously. So on this graph, on the x-axis, you have a data set size in terabyte, and the y-axis is the total mutation time to produce the whole data set in minutes. And you see that for the Marco's data set, the largest one, it took about 50 minutes. And for the smallest kernel data set, it took less than 2 minutes. And dependency is approximately linear. And this is totally CPU bound. So if you have faster CPU, it will go faster. We didn't write out this data to any disk or to any file system because performance of this will depend totally on your file system or storage. And moreover, we actually want to fit it to the deduplication systems in the future to see their performance. So let me conclude. We created the first technique for generating deduplication data sets. It preserves realistic properties of the real data sets. It allows the real fair comparison of different deduplication techniques, and it promotes the sharing of data sets among researchers. We did it by emulating file system changes, which we created a generic framework for doing that, which is very extensible and flexible, and we hope that people in the future will create their implementation of these modules that correspond to the way data sets change in their environments. We created our own model based on the data sets that we had. We based our model on the Markov model and multidimensional statistics that we were collecting. And our specific model provides high accuracy, small model size, and high performance for our data sets. There are still a lot of things that we want to do. The most important one, we want to study existing deduplication systems and see what parameters affect their performance and basically add these parameters to our multidimensional distribution. One important one is the local compression. We would like to work more on the initial file system generation because after talking to many people, it looks like we would like to have this more convenient interface than just using fsmutate sometimes. We would also like to generate some trend lines based on the sequence of their different profiles and find some more global statistics about how the file system changes. And of course, we want to analyze more data sets, so if you have any, we would be welcome to look at them. And finally, all the sources are available at this URL. You don't need to write it down. It's published in the paper. And now I'm glad to answer a question. Thank you.
So the question is, so you showed the error rate, it's different. So I'm curious, what's the contribution factors of affecting the error rate?
Affecting what?
Affecting the error rate. You have real parameters and you synthesize the parameters.
Yeah. So what affects what? What was, I'm not really getting it.
What's the reason of the
differences? So the differences are introduced because we're doing it statistically. So obviously we are not modifying the same exact files. We are not like having a trace. It's not an IO trace. We do it statistically. So as a result, as time goes, you know, from time to time, we might have differences at different points between different parameters. But again, we feel that these statistics that we maintain is enough to evaluate, you know, the dedup ratio and performance of the dedup systems.
Okay. The second question is, you showed that the mutation of the FS mutation time increases with the data sets. I'm curious if the mutation can be parallelized.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, it can be parallelized. So currently, software that we deploy, that we released, is not parallel. So it's just single threaded. But we kind of working a little bit on at least, you know, scanning the data sets in parallel, and then also maybe we will try to release the, you know, the code there. It is done in multiple threads, but so far it's a single threaded. Yeah.
Any other questions?